Investigative reporting by Inside Climate News and the Los Angeles Times alleges that Exxon was at the cutting edge of climate change research in the late 70s and early 80s and understood that burning fossil fuels would warm the planet in destructive ways. But the reporting also found Exxon later worked to seed doubt on the climate science and funded climate-denying organizations. Neela Banerjee is one of the lead reporters on the six-part Inside Climate News investigation. Neela, welcome to Living on Earth.
Thank you for having me.
So this is quite an investigation. 8 months long, I gather. Take us back to where you started.
We started looking into early climate research by academics and the federal government here in the United States. And in the process of looking at what those people were doing, we found out that scientists from Exxon had peer-reviewed research accepted in journals in the early 1980s. So that piqued our interest because, you know, a lot of us know the history of Exxon post-1990 when they worked on clouding understanding of climate change. So from there, we just started looking around. We came across a congressional hearing in 1979. And as a lark, I just decided to search if somebody from Exxon was there. And there was. It was a man named Henry Shaw. And we started Googling Henry Shaw. You know, who is he? That led to a paper that he did about a tanker that had been outfitted with equipment to measure carbon dioxide in the ocean and the atmosphere. And from there, we hopscotched from person to person archives and amassed the body of work that supports our series now.
Just briefly summarize your findings for me, please.
What we found was that as far back as 1977, everybody from rank and file scientists at Exxon all the way up to the executive suites knew about climate change and the emerging science then, which was called the greenhouse effect. Exxon monitored the science. And most interesting of all, from we can tell, Exxon was probably the only major company that launched its own in-house, very rigorous climate science research efforts.
And how much of a risk do they say the greenhouse effect, climate change, would be for civilization?
They understood very clearly that it was a significant risk to civilization, even as far back as 1977. They said that rising temperatures could destroy agriculture in many places, could shift precipitation patterns. And, you know, the end goal of all of this for Exxon was that they knew that if the science was correct, that at some point, governments would take action to rein in emissions of carbon dioxide. And they felt at the time that the best way to shape policy was to do really good science, to be taken seriously in order to have a seat at the table.
Neela, by the way, what exactly was the tanker research project on carbon that you discovered?
Very early, I think this was in 1977, 78, the science community really wanted to know the role that the oceans played in absorbing the carbon dioxide that was being emitted by the use of fossil fuels. So Exxon thought, you know, we have the resources to somehow help solve this question. And they outfitted one of their brand new super tankers, the Esso Atlantic. It was one of the biggest in the world, with specially made equipment to gather air samples along its route from the Gulf of Mexico to the Persian Gulf, and also samples of ocean water to see how the oceans were absorbing CO2. And they felt that if they did this over a period of time, you could get a regular continuous reading, and it would help scientists understand the role that the oceans played.
Now, Inside Climate News and Frontline cooperated to produce a short video about your investigation. And let's listen to a clip of former Exxon scientist Edward Garvey talking about the research you're describing.
We were generating what we thought was state-of-the-art information. We were doing science that we didn't think in any way, shape, or form would be questioned. And there was no questioning that the atmospheric carbon dioxide was increasing, that atmospheric carbon dioxide was going to change the climate in some fashion. The question was how fast, how much, and what kind of impacts would it have, you know, overall to the planet.
So all this information was presented to Exxon's top executives. I mean, you're talking about the very top of the company?
We are talking about the very top of the company. You know, the scientist in 1977 who made this presentation, his name was Jim Black, and he said he made it to the management committee of Exxon Corporation, the chairman, the CEO, and the senior vice president. And, you know, you can find them on the annual report. And they're not going to make time in their busy schedules for something that is not of great significance to the company. That was one instance, but there were many others that the documents support, and you can find them in our website. We've digitized a whole bunch of key documents, probably over 20 now. Exxon's scientists and managers from Exxon Research and Engineering, which was the hub of the research, regularly sent detailed updates to senior vice presidents who were members of the management committee about the research. Something like the tanker project, which required coordination across many different divisions of Exxon, could only occur if you had someone from the senior VP level sign off on it, former Exxon officials told us. And then, you know, we had this one lovely memo where an Exxon manager from research and engineering described getting into a quite detailed discussion with a senior vice president about the way the carbon cycle works and the role the oceans play. So clearly, this senior VP was well-read enough, was engaged enough on this issue to be having a passionate discussion with one of his managers about it.
Now, as I understand it, Exxon CEO back in 1996, Lee Raymond, was trained as a chemical engineer. Is that right?
That is right.
So let's play another clip, this time of Lee Raymond speaking in 1996.
Proponents of the global warming theory say that higher levels of greenhouse gases are causing world temperatures to rise and that burning fossil fuels is the reason. But scientific evidence remains inconclusive as to whether human activities affect the global climate.
Neela, according to your investigation, that's almost 20 years after Exxon scientists began warning of the possibility of greenhouse gas emissions causing world temperatures to rise and disrupt the climate. What's going on here? What is the CEO talking about when Exxon knew about this?
Well, you know, I mean, I think that's the question that everybody has to unearth, right? Why did this shift occur? You know, our documents go to 1986, and a lot of the people we spoke to left with mass layoffs at the company in the mid-80s for financial reasons, from what we could tell. By 1989, Exxon was one of the founders of this group called the Global Climate Coalition, which sounds very green, but in fact was a group of fossil fuel companies and major manufacturers that were working to stall action on climate change that the UN was considering. So what happened in 86 to 89 is hard to say. I mean, we have some insight into it. There was a management change. There was also a rise of kind of political conservatism that put the wind in the sails of business in this country and business's way of thinking about, you know, less regulation and so on. The interesting thing about Lee Raymond is that Mr. Raymond joined the Exxon board in 1984. He became a senior vice president then. In the 1980s, Exxon was looking at this massive gas field in the South China Sea called Natuna. And the gas field was delayed over and over again because it was this weird formation where there's natural gas, but a ton of CO2. And if they just vented the CO2 into the atmosphere while they were reaping the gas, it would have been the single largest point source of carbon dioxide in the world. Every year, the board, including Lee Raymond, told the staffers, you cannot go ahead with this project unless you find a way to deal with CO2. And then 10 years later, he had a very different approach to the threat that CO2 posed to the atmosphere. That project, by the way, is still mothballed.
Another news organization, the Los Angeles Times, recently began publishing its own series on the gulf between Exxon's internal and external dialogue on climate disruption. To what extent were these investigations, yours and the LA Times, independent?
Oh, they were independent. Back in the late winter, when we started to do this research and we started to talk to people who are mainly, you know, watchdogs, we heard that graduate students from Columbia's Journalism School were working on it. And later on, we found out that their partner on it was the LA Times. So we weren't coordinating with them at all. We just knew they were working on a similar track. And I thought they did a very good article that completed the picture. I mean, our research went up to about 1986, but we did not look at the Arctic. And I thought the LA Times and the Columbia J School people did an excellent job at filling in this kind of questionable and contradictory picture where you have Lee Raymond casting doubt on the fact that climate change might be happening publicly, but internally, Exxon scientists are looking at climate change and greater melting in the Arctic and how that might open up access to resources, oil and gas resources in the Arctic.
I'm sure Exxon has been in touch with you now a number of times in this process and then seen what you have published. What do they claim you've gotten wrong?
Well, what Exxon has said is that Inside Climate has written that they stopped doing climate research and they suppressed the results that they had. And we've not said either thing. I think the verb we use was curtailed because we're very aware that Exxon did a lot of ambitious research until about 1986 or so, and that they continued, but they continued doing research after that. And what the articles do take up, and we haven't gotten a satisfactory answer from Exxon about this, is why did Exxon shift its position from doing rigorous peer-reviewed science in order to have a constructive voice in policymaking to founding the GCC and to having its chief executive cast doubt on climate science? You know, he derided the very models, the very kinds of modeling that his scientists were doing 10 years before. That is really the nub of it, you know, is that shift that occurred.
Neela Banerjee is a reporter with Inside Climate News. Neela, thanks so much for taking the time today.
Thank you for having me.
And you'll find links to all their stories and more at our website, loe.org.